Hello and welcome. I'm so glad you're here because today we are diving into one of the most mark-rich topics in the entire AQA A-level psychology specification: inferential statistics. I know. The word statistics might make some of you want to close the tab immediately. But stick with me because once you understand the logic behind this topic, it becomes one of the most reliable sources of marks in your research methods paper. We're talking about questions that reward systematic thinking, and if you follow the decision-making process I'm going to walk you through today, you will be able to pick up those marks every single time. In this episode, we'll cover what inferential statistics actually are and why psychologists use them, the full test selection algorithm, which tests to use and when, how to interpret your results using critical value tables, the crucial difference between type 1 and type 2 errors, and then we'll finish with exam tips, a quick-fire quiz, and a summary to lock it all in. Let's go. So first things first, what is inferential statistics? When psychologists collect data, they're always working with a sample. They can't test every single person in the world, so they test a group and then try to infer, that's the key word, infer, whether their findings apply to the wider population. Inferential statistics give us a way to calculate the probability that our results occurred by chance. If that probability is low enough, typically below 5%, which we write as p is less than or equal to 0.05, we say the result is statistically significant. That means we can reject the null hypothesis and accept the alternative hypothesis. Now, the big skill that AQA tests you on is choosing the right statistical test. And here's where the decision-making algorithm comes in. There are three questions you must ask in order every single time. Question one, what is the aim of the study? Are you looking for a difference between groups or a correlation, a relationship between two variables? This is your first branch in the decision tree. Question two, if you're looking for a difference, what is the experimental design? Is it independent measures, where different participants are in each condition? Or is it repeated measures or matched pairs, where the same participants or matched participants appear in both conditions? Question three, what level of measurement is your data? Is it nominal, categories like yes or no, or favorite color? Is it ordinal, rank data like positions in a race or Likert scale responses? Or is it interval, data measured in standardized equal units like time in seconds, temperature in degrees, or IQ scores? Once you've answered those three questions, the test selects itself. Let me walk you through the main ones. For a different study with independent measures, if the data is nominal, you use chi-squared. If it's ordinal, you use the Mann-Whitney U-test. If it's interval, you use the unrelated T-test. For a different study with repeated measures or matched pairs, if the data is nominal, you use the sign test. If it's ordinal, you use the Wilcoxon signed ranks test. If it's interval, you use the related T-test. For a correlation study, if the data is ordinal or interval, you use Spearman's row. If it's nominal, you use chi-squared. Now, a brilliant mnemonic to help you remember the order of tests in the grid is carrots should come mashed with swede under roast potatoes. That stands for chi-squared, sign test, chi-squared again, Mann-Whitney, Wilcoxon, Spearman's row, unrelated t-test, related t-test, and Pearson's R. Write that down and memorize it. It's an absolute gift in the exam. One thing candidates consistently get wrong is the interval versus ordinal distinction. Here's the key. Interval data has equal, standardized units of measurement. Time in seconds is interval. Temperature in Celsius is interval. IQ scores are interval because they're based on a standardized scale. But a Likert scale, you know, where you rate something from 1 to 5, that is ordinal, because the gap between agree and strongly agree is not necessarily the same as the gap between neutral and agree. If you're not sure, ask yourself, are the units of measurement genuinely equal and standardized? If yes, interval. If not, ordinal. Now let's talk about interpreting your results. Once you've calculated your test statistic, let's call it the observed value, you need to compare it to a critical value from a table. The critical value depends on three things: your sample size n, your significance level, usually p equals 0.05, and whether your hypothesis is one-tailed, directional, or two-tailed, non-directional. Here's the crucial rule that so many candidates get wrong. For some tests, the observed value must be equal to or less than the critical value to be significant. These are the sign test, the Wilcoxon signed ranks test, and the Mann-Whitney U-test. For other tests, like Spearman's row and chi-squared, the observed value must be equal to or greater than the critical value. A handy way to remember which is which, the test named after people, Wilcoxon, Mann-Whitney, require the observed value to be smaller. Think of it as the smaller the discrepancy from zero, the more surprising it is, so the more significant. Finally, let's talk about type 1 and type 2 errors. These come up regularly in the exam, and candidates often muddle them. A type 1 error, sometimes called a false positive, occurs when you reject the null hypothesis when it is actually true. You conclude there is an effect when there isn't one. This is more likely to happen when you use a lenient significance level like p equals 0.10 because you're setting a low bar for significance. A type 2 error, a false negative, occurs when you retain the null hypothesis when it is actually false. You miss a real effect. This is more likely when you use a stringent significance level like p equals 0.01 because you're setting such a high bar that real effects don't clear it. The standard significance level of p equals 0.05 is a deliberate compromise between these two risks. In sensitive research, for example, testing a new drug, you might use p equals 0.01 to reduce the risk of a type 1 error because the consequences of falsely claiming a drug works could be harmful. Right, let's talk exam technique. When you're asked to justify your choice of statistical test, you must explicitly state all three criteria: the design, the aim, and the level of measurement. And crucially, you must quote evidence from the question stem to support each point. Don't just say, the data is ordinal. Say the data is ordinal because participants rated their anxiety on a scale of 1 to 10, which is ranked but does not have equal intervals between points. That's what earns you the marks. When comparing your observed value to the critical value, always state the direction of the inequality. Don't just say, the observed value is close to the critical value. Say the observed value of 8 is less than the critical value of 10. Therefore, the result is significant at p equals 0.05. Then state your conclusion. We can reject the null hypothesis and accept the alternative hypothesis that there is a significant difference. Always check your hypothesis before looking up the critical value. A directional hypothesis, one that predicts the direction of the effect, like scores will be higher after the intervention, requires a one-tailed test. A non-directional hypothesis, one that just predicts a difference or relationship without specifying direction, requires a two-tailed test. Using the wrong tail will give you the wrong critical value and potentially the wrong conclusion. Common mistakes to avoid: confusing ordinal and interval data. Remember, Likert scales are ordinal, not interval. Saying the observed value must always be higher than the critical value. It depends on the test. And forgetting to state whether the result is significant before accepting or rejecting the null hypothesis, always include that step explicitly. Okay, quick fire quiz time. I'll ask a question, give you a moment to think, then I'll give the answer. Question 1. A researcher uses a repeated measures design looking for a difference with ordinal data. Which test should they use? The answer is the Wilcoxon signed ranks test. Question 2. What does a type 1 error mean? You reject a true null hypothesis, a false positive. Question 3. For the sign test, what does S represent? S is the frequency of the least common sign, plus or minus, ignoring any zero differences. Question 4. If a researcher uses p equals 0.10 as their significance level, which type of error are they more at risk of making? A type 1 error, because the threshold is too lenient. Question 5. A study measures reaction time in milliseconds. What level of measurement is this? Interval, because milliseconds are standardized, equal units of measurement. How did you do? If you got all 5, brilliant. If not, go back and review the sections where you stumbled. Let's bring it all together. Inferential statistics allow psychologists to determine whether results are likely due to a real effect or just chance. The three questions for test selection are: what is the aim, difference, or correlation? What is the design, independent or repeated? And what is the level of measurement, nominal, ordinal, or interval? Use the mnemonic carrots should come mashed with Swede under roast potatoes to remember the test grid. When interpreting results, compare your observed value to the critical value, remembering that for Sign, Wilcoxon, and Mann-Whitney, the observed value must be equal to or less than the critical value to be significant. And always state your conclusion explicitly. Significant or not significant, reject or retain the null hypothesis. Type 1 errors are false positives caused by lenient significance levels. Type 2 errors are false negatives caused by stringent significance levels. The standard p equals 0.05 balances these risks. You've got this. Go back over the test selection flowchart, practice a few sign test calculations, and make sure you can explain type 1 and type 2 errors in your own words. Good luck. I'm rooting for you.